With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Volume.
Boxing with Chris Mannix is presented by FanDuel. Football season is here, and there's no better place to get into the action than with FanDuel. The app is safe, secure, and easy to use. FanDuel always has exclusive offers. When you win, you'll get paid fast. FanDuel has lots of ways to play, like the spread, money line, over-unders, team totals, player props, and so much more. Jump into the action at any time during the game with live betting, combine multiple bets on the same game in a same-game parlay, and try out the same game parlay plus. So use promo code BOXING and download the FanDuel app today to make every moment more this football season.
This is Boxing with Chris Mannix.
Oh, somebody punch him in the face.
Anthony Joshua is a composed and ferocious finisher. Watch this.
Andy Ruiz is the heavyweight champion.
Hosted by SI's Chris Mannix.
That was my moment.
Now with interviews, analysis, and everything going on in the world of boxing.
When you have talent, you are given another chance.
Here's Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Boxing with Chris Mannix, part of the Volume Sports Podcast Network. We've got a great show for you this week. I am in Las Vegas, the site of Canelo Triple G, the trilogy-completing fight between two of the biggest stars in boxing. That will go down Saturday night at T-Mobile Arena, live on DAZN pay-per-view. I have been here all week long. I have talked to the fighters. I have talked to the trainers. I have talked to people that know the fighters and the trainers. And I'm going to break down this fight from all angles with you. Keith Idek, friend of the program, BoxingScene.com. He is going to join me, and we are going to have a pretty robust discussion about this fight and exactly what it means for both fighters. And a reminder, after the fight, I'm going to be coming to you with a bonus podcast. The Latin Snake himself, Sergio Mora, he is going to join me fresh from ringside to talk about what we saw on Saturday night between Canelo and Triple G. All right, Keith Idek, BoxingScene.com. I'm going to give you an over-under. How many slices of pizza do you think I've eaten this week?
Oh, I thought you were going to say how many slices of pizza have I eaten, which I would have been higher probably.
3 days so far, three full days. How many slices do you think?
10?
Wow, you went higher. Seven slices of pizza, including two today. No, I do not want any more pizza.
I'm getting another slice of pizza.
Thank you, because I'm brought over to you. No, I'm all set with pizza. We are in the MGM Grand Press Center, the home areas. I'm getting heckled by mid-level PR staffers from the side. Fred Sternberg.
Fred's always heckling someone.
He's like that. That's correct. Yes, I am Greg Bishop's intern. We are here at the MGM Grand Press Center, the site of Gennady Golovkin, Canelo Alvarez. The trilogy completing third fight is Saturday. You can watch that fight on DAZN pay-per-view. All right, so let's just kind of start here, Keith, with Canelo Golovkin. Like the buzz you're kind of feeling for this fight compared to the previous two. You were at both those previous two fights. How are you feeling going into this one compared to the other two?
Well, it's only Thursday, I guess, but you know, more people are going to filter into Las Vegas over the next couple of days for Mexican Independence Day weekend. I'm sure the weigh-in will be wild tomorrow. But there's
I guess the question is more like, is this fight as compelling as the first
two? Oh, the fight itself or the event?
I guess a little bit of both, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think both are less compelling. I think that's probably fair because 4 years have passed since the last fight. You know, they've separated themselves in a variety of ways. Triple G's obviously 40 years old. He's only fought four times in the 4 years, somewhat pandemic related. Had COVID himself, of course. So there's less buzz. I mean, it's just the way it is. I mean, this fight, in my opinion, based on people that I've spoken to, the pay-per-view buy rate, they're expecting to be lower than for Canelo Alvarez's fight against Caleb Plant last year, which no one would have said if they would have fought 3 years ago. Now, of course, Caleb Plant hadn't fought Canelo Alvarez at that point, but no one would have said that Triple G Canelo 3 would do less pay-per-view buys than Caleb Plant Canelo Alvarez. No one sane would have said that. And now that's being discussed in boxing circles by people who know what they're talking about, because the event is probably happening 3 years later than it was supposed to have happened or should have happened. And it's $85, which is, you know, a pretty high price point, I suppose. But they are still two of the biggest stars in the sport. Canelo's the biggest star in the sport, certainly in American boxing. He's the biggest star. And the rivalry does mean something. People do want to see the third fight. And I personally think the fight itself is going to be a competitive fight. I don't see, just because Triple G is 40 years old, I don't see Canelo Alvarez coming in there and running him out of the ring or beating him up to the degree where he could potentially stop him. I don't see that happening. I see a maybe not as competitive of a fight as their second fight, but still a reasonably competitive fight that Canelo Alvarez will win by unanimous decision.
So what's the biggest question for you coming into this fight? You've got some variables out there, right? You mentioned the age of Gennady Golovkin, just months removed from turning 40 years old. He has been relatively inactive since that second fight against Canelo back in the fall of 2018. He's 4-0 since then. He's reclaimed his middleweight title. He has unified that middleweight title. Well, I was on record. I thought he was 3-1. I thought he lost the Derevchenko fight, but judges gave it to him. He's been on the wrong end of judging as well, so we'll give him that one. But, you know, he fought Derevchenko, good fight. Steve Rolls, not so much. Camille Zaremeta, thanks for coming. And then, you know, Ryota Murata, who I think it's safe to say was the weakest of the middleweight champions that were out there at the time. So that's on Golovkin's side. On Canelo's side, he's coming down from 175. He's coming off his first loss in almost 10 years. Like, what's the biggest question for you? What are you looking for in this fight?
Well, the biggest questions for me are how is Triple G going to compete with Canelo now that he's 40 years old? Because, look, the first four-plus rounds of the Murata fight were not good for Triple G. He got hit a lot. You know, Canelo said the other day when I asked him about this, he said he felt like Triple G, he didn't use the word respect, but he felt like Triple G had felt his power early in the fight, wasn't really all that concerned about it, and maybe was a little lax defensively, which he would not do against Canelo probably. So maybe the performance wasn't quite as bad as it appeared. And it was also his first fight in almost 17 months. You know, he was rusty. You know, he hadn't fought in a long time. He's fighting in his opponent's home country. There were a lot of variables there that could have made it more, you know, more difficult for him than people expected. Of course, once he got into a rhythm and he started busting up Murata, you know, he dominated him over the last few rounds, dropped him and stopped him. And I think it was the ninth round, I'm pretty sure,
yeah.
Right? So overall, a good performance. You know, he won by technical knockout. He was winning on all three scorecards. So it wasn't like he was behind in the fight and came back and stopped him or anything. Not a great performance. But the questions that we would be asking quite naturally, Chris, is how is he going to fight at 40 years old against an elite-level opponent, which Murata is not. You know, no one's going to confuse Canelo Alvarez for Ryota Murata. So that's what we have to find out, right? At 40, can he still be as competitive with someone as good as Canelo? Now, he's going to use that power jab, which was really effective for him in the second fight. He's going to throw a lot of punches. He's going to throw more punches than Canelo, even at 40. He's 8 years older, but he's going to be more active just because that's not the way Canelo fights for the most part. So is that going to be enough to beat Canelo Alvarez? I don't think so. But look, Canelo's not invincible. We found that out 4 months ago, right? He decisively lost that fight. A lot of people thought, the scores were entirely too close.
Way too close.
Right?
I'm sure
we'll get into the scorecards later. But, you know, he lost nine rounds probably. And it was still 115, 113 on all three cards, which I understand why Triple G cannot make a public thing out of this. Like, he can't make it seem like it's on his mind. How could it not be on his mind? He won the first fight, had to settle for a split draw. Second fight was very competitive. I thought Canelo won. I understand the perspective of people who might think that Golovkin won, but I do think Canelo deserved the nod in that fight. So in my mind, they're 1-1, and this is kind of a unofficially a rubber match. But at 40 years old and at 168 pounds for the first time, a division in which Canelo Alvarez has succeeded as much. He beat everyone, cleaned out the whole division, beat a whole bunch of undefeated champions. Some people might say those guys are not, you know, Callum Smith, Billy Joe Saunders, Caleb Plant are not elite level fighters, but they were world champions. They were undefeated world champions when he beat them, and he cleaned out the division in a very short amount of time.
Yeah, the judging is interesting, because if you're Golovkin, don't you have to just kind of sell out in this fight? Like, you cannot count on getting a decision against Canelo Alvarez in Vegas. I was with you. I forget how I scored the Bivol fight, but it was at least 8-4, maybe 9-3 in favor of Bivol. The fact that all three judges had 115, 113, whereas if one round had flipped, there would have been a draw in that fight. That was wild. Bivol deserved to win that fight. But if you look at the history of Canelo in Vegas, he gets close decisions. Now, that's not to say he doesn't deserve to get them. I mean, people can argue Arislandi Lara may have beat Canelo. I thought that was a close fight, and, you know, sometimes it goes the other way. But you go back to even the losses, whether it was the Bivol fight or the atrocious scorecard we saw in the Mayweather fight where CJ Ross had it even, a fight that Canelo clearly lost. Doesn't Golovkin, or shouldn't Golovkin, have the mindset in this fight where I got to go for broke? I have to try to knock this guy out because that will probably be the only way I can win.
I would say yes, Chris, except that he would then be exposing himself to getting caught with something and being and finding himself in a position that he's never found himself in. We've never seen Gennady Golovkin, quote-unquote, hurt. I know he's felt particular punches in his career and maybe masked it very well, but we haven't seen him knocked down, beaten up, or anything like that. And if you take those kinds of risks and just throw caution to the wind because of what you're mentioning, which makes sense, but I don't know that he can do that.
Easier said than done. You know?
Right. And I don't know that you...
speed counter
puncher. That's what I'm saying. I mean, you put yourself in a position where you could get clipped with something that could really get you knocked out, you know, end your career, whatever it might be, because Canelo's just too dangerous to do that. But on the flip side, you can't go into this fight based on many of the things that you just mentioned, thinking that you're going to win on the scorecards, whether that's obviously unfair and shouldn't exist, but that's the subjective nature of scoring boxing. And for whatever reason, Canelo Alvarez gets the benefit of the doubt on the scorecards virtually every single time. The scorecards that CJ Ross submitted for the Mayweather fight and Adelaide Byrd even more so for the first fight between Triple G and Canelo are two of the worst scorecards in recent boxing history. The common denominator, obviously, is Canelo, and people haven't forgotten any of that. There's no way
Golovkin
Triple G
hasn't forgotten that.
That's what I'm saying.
No.
There's no way Triple G's forgotten about that. Chris, I'll say this. I don't want to disparage guys who are quality judges like Dave Moretti and Steve Weisfeld, but I can't imagine that Triple G is okay with them scoring the fight, this fight, because they both scored the Bivol-Canelo fight, 115-113, for Canelo. I think we're all in agreement that that's just entirely too close. Mm-hmm. They both scored Canelo a 115-113 winner in their rematch. Not absurd by any stretch. I mean, it was a competitive fight. Could have, you know, I think Canelo won. I was fine with it, 115-113. Moretti did score. Weisfeld did not score their first fight, but Moretti scored their first fight 115-113 for Triple G, which probably makes him say, okay, well, he's given me a fair shake against Canelo in the past, and I'm okay with him. But I don't know, man. Like, you're all right with the two guys who just scored. Not only did they all score Bivol-Canelo 115-113 for Bivol, all three of them gave each of the first four rounds
that was wild.
To Canelo.
That was wild. I think it was 2-2. I had a 2-2, I think, through four.
Which, right. Reasonable.
Yeah.
Worst case scenario, 3-1, but you can't. If you have.
No way you give him all four. Look,
there's just no way that he lost all four rounds, and they were in complete agreement on that. So it's almost like.
I don't know what to make of that when you have all four
either.
Judges in complete agreement on four rounds that clearly should not have been scored that way. Like, that to me is like. And I hate saying this because I've said many times, and I think you'd agree, I think Steve Weisfeld is one, if not the best judge in all of boxing. He is, in my opinion, the gold standard. Dave Moretti's been around for a while, has been pretty consistent in terms of high level. David Sutherland, less so much, but I think he's fine as a judge. It's just weird. Like, whenever Canelo Alvarez gets in the ring, these judges seem to see something with what he's doing that his opponents are not.
It's interesting, Chris, because I'm not casting any aspersions on anyone because I know Steve Weisfeld personally. Like, judges are...
Jersey guys stick together.
Right. Yeah, the Jersey guys are, you know, they're thick and thin together.
You all eat,
together,
pizza at the local whatever.
Well, not as much pizza as you,
not
apparently.
Pizza as me, but nobody does that.
Like, the fact that you've eaten more than twice as much pizza since you've been here and since I've been here is a... No one would have bet on that, probably,
no
right?
Chance.
But I've had three slices of pizza since I've been here.
Busted you there.
Yeah. But anyway, you know, so it's not... Yeah, I understand from the outside looking in, people think it's corruption and people are greasing people's palms and, you know, paying people under the...
It's not quite how that works.
We're not naive, either of us, obviously. Mm-hmm. We're very skeptical people in general because of what we do for a living. But I don't think that's what it... I would like to know the actual answer. Is it just... You know, so, because sometimes you could just be seated on a different side of the ring as someone and have a different perspective of what's going on because you don't have the benefit of the best television angles or whatever. You get your angle, and if it's you don't see what's happening, you don't see what's happening because the guy's back is to you or whatever the case might be. But it's a very subjective science. You know, people usually prefer aggression, effective aggression anyway. But Canelo just doesn't throw a lot of punches, like, sometimes, and I don't get it sometimes, you know?
Yeah. But you know what I like, though? This happened at the AJ Usyk fight, right? Who is it? Was it Don Trella, Glenn Feldman? Who was the judge one of the judges that scored it for Joshua?
Glenn Feldman.
Glenn Feldman, right? Who was a good judge.
Very
good judge. Somebody caught up to him. Somebody tracked him down after that fight and asked him the question. I would love to see judges be more accountable and be available for questions, you know, after that. Just if you're going to score it a certain way in a high profile situation where there's so much money on the line, there should be some transparency there, I think.
I agree with you, but the reason why judges don't speak, as you well know, Chris, is there are mandates from the commissions that they not speak.
Right.
Because they don't want to put guys in pressure. They're not used to dealing with reporters.
Well, some commissions will send the referee out there, though. Like, Jersey will...
Well, we saw how that went.
Didn't go well for the
referee. Okay, I mean, you know, you're talking about the Gary Russell on the Gary Russell undercard.
Yeah.
And those were some of the most bizarre explanations I've ever heard. And,
but, like, I want that. I kind of, like, if you are not confident enough to do this...
It's like, great for the theater of boxing.
Correct.
It's not great for, you know, having faith in commission. That the referee who you're speaking about was looking at the replay on a screen that's bigger than this room and was literally saying that what everyone else saw happen didn't happen. So you put that guy in a position where now people think he's a clown.
Mm.
Like, you know, now people don't take him. It was absurd what he was saying. Like, I couldn't believe he was saying.
It's
great
TV. Is
this happening?
It's great TV.
But that's why they don't want to put people in positions that they're not accustomed to being in. You don't want a guy to say the wrong thing. Or maybe, you know, if they feel like they're being accused of something, they might react in a negative way, and they just don't want
that. How about this then? How about this? Like, because in the NBA, you can't talk to referees, right? You can't just walk up to ex-referee and ask a question. What you can do, though, is afterwards, there is a pool reporter. And I think there's other sports as well. But you have one reporter designated to go into a referee's locker room and ask them about something.
Like a controversial call of some sort,
like,
or someone being ejected or something.
Yeah, like what did you, you know, say for Glenn Feldman, for example. You go in there and you say, a lot of people had to score wide the other way. What were you seeing? Just 2-3 questions.
Yeah.
And let that be the end of it. I think grown men or women are able to handle that. Like, I'd like to believe they could handle that.
And you would like to see accountability from people who are deciding people's careers.
Yes, lives,
the amounts of money people are making. And now let's not ignore the fact that gambling has become such a factor in every professional sport,
Agreed.
Including boxing. Like, I wouldn't bet on boxing if I were a fan because, you know, there are too many variables that could, you know, a guy wins 9 rounds and suddenly he loses the fight and you lose all this money. It's crazy.
Yeah, I won a lot of money when Paul Williams beat Arislandi Lara that night in Jersey.
Well,
those judges were suspended right afterwards.
May he rest in peace. That was I remember Dan Goosen coming to ringside and it would being a fiasco at ringside. But yeah, I mean, you would like to see more accountability. That's a fair point, Chris. But I just think they just don't want to put guys in positions that they're not accustomed to. You know, again, when people are paying their hard-earned money and, you know, for pay-per-view, whether they're gambling on the fight, paying tickets, there should be more accountability. I think that's definitely a fair way to look at it. Yeah.
All right. When it comes to questions, to go back to the original topic, biggest question I have is how does Golovkin handle the body attack? Because in the second fight against Canelo, the numbers reflected he went to the body and he was effective. Since then, Golovkin has looked vulnerable to to big body shots, mm-hmm. whether it was Derevchenko, who hurt him in that fight with body shots. Murata, you alluded to early on, though I think it was the third round.
Yeah.
He hit Golovkin with a big shot to the body. Yep. Gennady stepped back, took a deep breath, and continued on. But I had a chance to ask Golovkin and Jonathan Banks this week about concern about that. How do they adjust to that? And they were pretty dismissive of mm-hmm. Gennady's vulnerability there. Maybe they're just saying that to me. Maybe they have mm-hmm. a plan to protect the midsection, do something differently to make sure you don't get beat up. But if they don't, I think that's a tactical mistake. I think Canelo is going to zero in on that midsection. He's going to target it. He's going to throw bombs at it. And look, we don't, I think neither one of us believe Gennady's getting stopped with a headshot. Like, he's just too strong mm-hmm. and got too good a chin. But you land enough body shots on a guy that has an already weakened midsection, that's going to be a problem for him. So that, to me, is the biggest question in the ring. How does Gennady hold up to those body attacks?
You know, the old boxing adage is, Chris, no one likes it to the body, of course. And as you
the
get
the body never forgets.
Right.
Sergio tells me that all the time. It's like, once you get hurt there, it never goes away.
Yeah, especially from a psychological standpoint also. So well, he better do something. I hope after 8 or 9 weeks in training camp, they devise some sort of strategy to prevent that from happening. Because, as you said, that's the only path to Canelo winning by stoppage, I think, because he's got a granite chin, and we've seen him take some bombs in fights where you're like, holy moly, how is he walking through this? And he always has against pretty big punchers, you know, including Canelo. So I hope they have some strategy devised to do it, because otherwise, I mean, it could be a real problem for him.
You know, Banks said to me, he's like, we don't see it as, I think he said, a risk factor. All right, well, it feels risky to me. It feels like that's where you're going to get hit, and if you're not protecting it,
look,
you can get knocked out a body. Gennady knows better than anyone you can knock out a body. I can still hear the Matthew Macklin body shot ringing in my ear at Foxwoods that time, 8-9 years ago.
Right. But look, Banks is a cerebral guy. I'm sure they've dotted all their I's and crossed all their T's, and maybe they're just not going to tell us maybe exactly what the plan is.
Tell,
but, you know, I
mean, media members when they ask them direct questions. You know, how dare they not do that? I asked Sergio this week, and I'll ask you the same question. Who needs this fight more? Who is this fight more important to?
Canelo, you would have to say, although he won the second fight and he's the only one officially who has won one of the fights, he's got more to lose. Because if Golovkin loses, well, he's supposed to. Canelo's at least a 5-1 favorite according to most of the reputable sports books right now. Maybe that'll change a little bit. It'll fluctuate a little bit before the fight, but those are pretty wide odds for two guys who have been so completely competitive in their first two fights. So he's supposed to, he's 40. He's fighting at 168 pounds for the first time. A lot of people think he lost the Derevchenko fight, you know, since the last time he fought Canelo. There are a lot of factors working against Triple G. So people, I think the public perception is that he's going to lose this fight. So if he loses, he'll have made, you know, more than $20 million in a guarantee, and gotten the third fight that he always wanted, the fight that he was promised when he signed with DAZN, that it's finally happening 3.5 years after he signed that contract. So he's getting what he wants. But Canelo, if he loses this fight, he'll have lost to a 40-year-old guy who's fighting at 168 pounds for the first time, who probably lost to Derevchenko 3 years ago. So he's got more, and then he'll have lost for the first time. He'll have lost back-to-back fights. He's never been in that position before. So he would then go from being the consensus pound-for-pound king of boxing to having lost back-to-back fights to Dmitry Bivol, who was around, I think he was a 4-1 favorite over Bivol too, which was clearly too wide. But then he'll have lost back-to-back fights to Bivol and to Golovkin, who he was heavily favored to beat. Where does he go from there? Because then no one wants to see him fight Bivol again, right?
No, but he would honestly, if you had to make a comparison, he would kind of enter Anthony Joshua territory, where it's like you're a big star, but you might have to rebuild a little bit. You might be talking about you taking a lesser fight before going into maybe a fourth fight with Golovkin.
The only thing that I would say in comparing Canelo to Joshua is Canelo has accomplished a lot more.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, Anthony Joshua is an enormous star. I'm not saying he isn't. But if you compare their resumes, they're kind of incomparable.
I'm not even comparing resumes. I'm more like where they go after back-to-back losses. Like,
right.
You know,
no, I understand.
And we'll get to this. But if the Joshua Fury fight doesn't happen, which I still don't believe, you'll probably see Joshua fighting a lower-level guy in December or January. It's sort of like a rebuilding stage of his career as he bounces back from those two losses. I feel like you put it this way. In Canelo's next fight, I wouldn't expect it to be a killer. I wouldn't expect Golovkin part four. I wouldn't expect Bivol part two. I wouldn't expect one of the top guys at 168. I would expect something a little lower. You disagree?
Well, I know he certainly would. If he loses to Golovkin, that's not going to sit well with him, and he would do everything in his power to try to get the fourth fight right away, I just think, from a psychological standpoint. But Golovkin would suddenly be in the driver's seat for the first time. Mm-hmm. He's never had the leverage in this situation, and he might just pull a Marquez.
We call it a Marquez.
I'm not saying he's going to knock Canelo out, obviously, but certainly not knock him unconscious. But he would finally have the power, and he might say, well, I'm not going to fight him again. I don't need to. I'll go fight. Because he said, look, what he said yesterday to us was that this is his last fight with the Zone. Now, he signed a six-fight contract with the Zone. This is only the fifth fight. He said emphatically yesterday, this is my last fight with the Zone. If that is true...
I believe that to be true as
well.
So if
that's true, I could easily see him, if he were to win the fight and he says, F this guy, I'm not doing this again, he can go eat that for the rest of his life that I beat him in the last fight.
Oh, that would drive Canelo crazy.
It would drive Canelo crazy, correct. All right. So then I could see him dropping back down the middleweight and then going, you know, giving Al Haymon a call. Say, look, you want to make this Charlo fight?
Mm-hmm.
Let's go make this Charlo fight. And then he works.
Have to come up with a lot of money to make Charlo Canelo or Charlo Golovkin.
They would. And I don't think Charlo would do that next, even if Golovkin won on Saturday night and wanted to do that next, because Charlo hasn't fought in a very long time. And it certainly doesn't seem, based on what I was told, that this Selesky fight is going to be rescheduled anytime soon. So he would have to get some kind of fight in between before that would happen. But the point is that Golovkin would have many more options, particularly because he owns, if you count the IBO, he owns three middleweight titles, and he could go fight Charlo in a big fight. Well, Andrade is not the middleweight champion. Not that he would. They've made it clear they don't want.
I think that ship is sailed.
I'm sorry.
Whoa,
I mentioned the A
PTSD.
Word.
PTSD. Whoa.
The A word on this podcast. I don't want to get you go down an Andrade rabbit hole, but. But there are options for him, as I guess what I'm saying. He would be the fully unified super middleweight champion. So if he were comfortable at that weight, well, he could fight a multitude of super middleweights.
He could call Al Haymon and go fight Caleb Plant if Plant winds up beating
Durrell
in his next fight. David Benavidez, that's a much riskier fight, I think, for Golovkin, but that's certainly available to him. I agree that there's a lot at stake for Canelo, but I have a bit of a different take on Golovkin, because I've been reading a lot and hearing a lot this week about, no matter what happens in this fight, Gennady Golovkin is going to walk into the Hall of Fame on the first ballot. I kind of sort of shrug a little bit at that, because, look, he's got a great record. He is undoubtedly one of the most entertaining fighters of this generation. But when I look at his resume, I see Daniel Jacobs, I see David Lemieux, I see Sergey Derevyanchenko. I don't see a depth of quality wins. And I think that, to me, that is a variable when you start talking about fighters and their candidacy for the Hall of Fame. I want to see 3, 4, 5 quality, high-level wins. Now, I will acknowledge readily that for 6 years, he chased all the top guys, longer really, because he chased Felix Sturm before he came to the U.S. He's been chasing the top guys forever. Sergio Martinez avoided him. Miguel Cotto avoided him. Canelo, even, for a couple of years longer than people wanted, didn't want to fight him. Or at least Oscar De La Hoya at that time didn't want Canelo fighting Golovkin. But in the last 3 years, he has had opportunities to burnish his resume. He could have fought Andrade. He could have fought Charlo. He could have fought Jaime Munguia, which would have been a reasonably high-level win. He didn't. Look, it's a business. He clearly made the right decision, because he's going to get paid in excess of $20 million probably for this fight. But there's a consequence for that. And that's, you know, it gets taken into account that when Golovkin had the opportunity to fight all the big fights he was clamoring for early, he didn't do it. And that to me, that is going to be a factor when Hall of Fame consideration comes around.
So this is a hot take from Chris Mannix that Gennady Golovkin is not a first ballot Hall of Famer.
I'm not sure. Well, again, as you know, because the Hall of Fame is ridiculous.
This is not the Baseball Hall of Fame, by the way.
No, it's not. It's the Hall of Fame where three guys get in every year no matter what. So you know, if there's a year where there's no top guys, Mo, Larry, and Curley are getting in. Shout out, by the way, to Ivan Calderon. I'm going to keep voting for you every year until you get in.
105 pounds.
I love Ivan Calderon. Like, he was great back in the day. He's kind of actually, not to go down a rabbit hole, but he's kind of the bar for me. Like, you got to be better than Ivan Calderon to get into the Hall of Fame on my ballot. Guy that was for 6 years, like, the best little man in all of boxing. So, but that to me is it. Like, with the understanding that Boxing Hall of Fame is goofy in that way, like, do I look at Golovkin as a first ballot Hall of Famer? I don't know. I don't see the quality wins on the resume.
Well, here's what I would say. I think he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. One, because the standards are simply lower for the Boxing Hall of Fame than they are, particularly for the Baseball Hall of Fame, right? I mean, that's probably the most stringent
And would you not argue the best? Like, I think Baseball Hall of Fame is the best.
Yeah.
Like, you got to get 75%
of the
vote.
It's inconsistent, you know, because of the steroids right.
With obviously, but like, I like it. Every year, you should have to get 75% of the vote.
Yeah.
Like, that's it.
Yeah.
It's got to be a consensus that you get in.
He does not officially have a win against a guy who was the pound for pound king.
Now there,
but he won. I think most people would agree that he won the first fight. The Derevianchenko. Now look, Derevianchenko has lost a lot of fights against top level guys in the last couple of years, but he's a top level middleweight, and that dogfight to me was the fight of the year in 2019. He did win the fight officially.
Close, but another one where it's like,
right.
You know, I had 14-13 Derevianchenko when
it was a
the
close
other way,
fight. And look, I know people don't want to hear excuses, and I'm not trying to make an excuse for Golovkin. Their contention is that he was sick the whole fight week. Maybe he might not have even should have fought.
Third time I've heard that. Like Gabe Rosado, he was sick the whole
fight
week.
I understand. Like I said, and people don't want to hear excuses.
No,
fighters go into fights injured all the time and have many things going on in their heads that they never tell people about, you know, family problems or whatever. So I understand that, but the Derevianchenko win, which is officially a win, is a good win in my opinion. You know, two very close back and forth fights with an elite level fighter who became the pound for pound king. He was he had some version of a middleweight title for a very long time. So I, for whatever it's worth, I think he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. But would it? If he beats Canelo convincingly on Saturday, of course.
Then he becomes undisputed champion at 168,
right.
too.
And of course,
it's
that,
a wrap.
You know, that would strengthen his legacy. Mm-hmm. There's no denying that. But you do make a good point about, you know, having, because I was flat out told that they basically told, that his people told the Zone, we're not fighting Demetrius Andrade.
That is accurate.
Stop asking us about
that. That is actually almost close to verbatim,
right,
I believe.
Right. So,
if I'm not mistaken.
And that's unfortunate for Andrade because he's never really gotten the type of opportunities that we would have liked to have seen him receive over the last few years. But so he didn't fight him. I'm not going to say that him not fighting Charlo is his fault necessarily. I mean,
no,
you know.
No, it's not. Although Charlo would have been the one where if you were going to get kind of a cross promotional deal done, I feel like Heyman would have been more open to that,
yeah,
to get him in with Golovkin, to get that king-making opportunity. I feel like
yeah,
that was doable. And look, Munguia was doable. That to one is the most surprising because Munguia's beatable. Like, he's really good.
When is Munguia going to fight somebody?
That's
for
another
God's
conversation,
sake, you know?
Entirely. He's going to go forever fighting kind of the second-tier guys. But I just, you know, I guess in a way, I would never hold the first, like, 6-7 years of Golovkin's U.S. career against him because he tried. Tom Loeffler tried. HBO tried. They were doing everything they can to get the top guys in the ring with him. All of them passed. But I kind of believe the last few years when he was making business decisions have to be taken into account. Like, all the fights he was begging for, they were there. You know, Charlo, Andrade, Munguia, I don't know who else is out there. He chose not to do them. He could have gotten out of the Zaremeta mandatory by fighting Andrade if he wanted to. He could do a unification fight. That would have been makeable.
You know what? It's interesting, Chris, because I think what he was really doing there, and he obviously has never said this to me, but I think what he was doing there was he was guaranteed a certain amount of money for the Zaremeta fight, which he did not get. It was renegotiated, and he still got a lot of money for fighting Kamaru Zaremeta in front of no one because it was in the heart of the pandemic and everything, and he was his mandatory. But I think he was, in that case, he was trying to prove a point to DAZN because he wasn't getting, he thought he would have gotten the Canelo fight at that point, which was what he was promised when he signed this contract with DAZN. So I think there was a little back and forth there between them where he demanded the Zaremeta fight because he felt like he wasn't being treated fairly with Canelo. Now that is not necessarily DAZN's fault. They were told something by Golden Boy that was not true. So they were operating under the premise that they could deliver Canelo and that they would make this fight, which obviously didn't happen, and then he separated from Golden Boy and, you know, all the things that we know have happened. But
and by, just to clear one thing up, and I'm pretty sure you know this as well, if the pandemic had not happened, they were going to fight in the fall of 2020. Like, that was going to happen. The way it was set up was Golovkin was going to fight Zerameta in March, Canelo was going to fight, I believe, Saunders in May, and the two were going to meet in September. That, as far as I understand, that was all but agreed to there. Canelo had come off his issues with Golovkin at that time, and he was going to fight him back then. So, you know, for whatever it's worth, that fight was going to happen in September of 2020.
Yeah, and there was a point, like I said, that Golovkin was the one, so I'm not going to fight Canelo. So then people are saying, well, you want the fight or you don't. And but I do think there was something internally going on between him and DAZN, and that's more what that was about than him not actually wanting to fight Canelo, because of course he wants to fight Canelo. He wants to avenge his only loss and make more money. He's clearly going to make more money on Saturday night than he made fighting any of the other guys he's fought since he fought Canelo the last time.
No question. Smart business decision. But, you know, when given the opportunity to fight these top guys, he chose not to. And I just that counts for me as a variable in all this. Last thing on Golovkin, what do you make of kind of this sort of heel turn he's made in recent years, where he's come a little more surly? You know, he's still affable at times, but, like, you know, it just feels like, well, he's a little bit of a different guy in the last couple of years.
He's surly toward Canelo.
Yeah.
I don't sense that he's really surly toward other people. Like, he was kind of surly toward Coventry yesterday. Beyond that, I mean, I don't really see him. It's interesting in that if Canelo continues to say the reason that he doesn't like Gennady Golovkin more than anything is because he thinks he's a phony, that he portrays this public persona of being this nice guy and, you know, smiling all the time and, you know, Mexican style and what all the things that he's been parroting for the last, you know, 10 or 12 years or whatever it is. So he thinks he's a phony and that he's not really a good guy. I don't know. I mean, I don't spend a lot of time around Gennady Golovkin other than fight weeks and everything. I have no reason to believe he's a bad guy per se, but,
no.
But he's promoting the fights too, right? It's generated.
He's still sticking
buzz.
Canelo with the positive drug test stuff. Like, well, he shows up at Grand Arrival and said, I want a clean sport.
In fairness, why shouldn't he? Because the bottom line is, once you have that stain on your record, it doesn't go away. And some people are willing to forget it, and some people aren't. And if I'm risking my life against this guy three times, I'm not forgetting it. And the other thing is, he knows it gets under his skin. So he's going to continue to do it because he knows he's pissing him off. So if you know you can get a rise out of someone like that, and you intensely dislike that person, why wouldn't you do it? In fairness to Golovkin, like, he was, whatever the excuse is, Mexican street meat, whatever they've come up with, the bottom line is he failed two drug tests before he was supposed to fight Gennady Golovkin the second time. That's indisputable. And if I'm Gennady Golovkin, I'm not letting that go.
And he's most certainly not at this point. That's certainly fair play by him. All right, a couple other things I want to hit you with before we go. ESPN on Thursday reporting that Terrence Crawford, Errol Spence materially agreed to terms on a deal. This has been something that has been reported on for over a month now at this point. They're getting closer, getting closer. Should we get excited at this point for November 19th, Spence against Crawford? Do you believe we're at that proverbial five-yard line?
Look, I think they're going to fight November 19th. I've thought that all along. I just think that there's too much money at stake for both guys. The alternatives for Crawford are not great. The alternatives for Spence are not what are going to be palatable for the public, but they're better than what Crawford's options are.
Thurman being the main.
Right. And Thurman's a known fighter, and people
and
have wanted to see
there.
Them fight.
It would have been a good promotion.
And people have wanted to see them fight for a number of years, although Thurman's deteriorated a little bit. So he has more options than Crawford. So I just always kind of thought that Crawford eventually is just going to, whenever they get to the point where it's like either now or never, he's going to accept the deal, just because even if he has to take less of a percentage or take less of a guarantee or whatever, you know, all the things that have been hanging up the deal, you know, the rematch percentages, all of that stuff, right? Like, he would eventually just accept what he had to accept. One, because he thinks he's going to beat Errol Spence, of course. Two, because he's going to make less than a third to fight anyone else. And then who was he fighting?
Victor, Virgil Ortiz?
Well, that's the thing. All the rest of the welterweights relevant welterweights for the most part are with PBC. Now, Boots Ennis is not with PBC, but Terrence Crawford is not going to fight Boots Ennis if he's not going to fight Errol Spence Jr. So the alternative probably is Virgil Ortiz, who is his mandatory. That's a tough – I'm not saying Crawford –
for a lot less money, which
right,
is the key.
Crawford, in my opinion, if he fought Virgil Ortiz tomorrow, he would win. But it's a dangerous fight and for a lot less money. So eventually he's just going to – he doesn't like the fact and doesn't trust the fact that this is a PBC event, basically, and he's not a PBC guy. He came from Top Rank and now he's a free agent. He's mistrustful of a lot of things, and that's been part of the negotiations as well, like worrying about all the things, about every little detail about fight week, making sure everything's on point because he's just mistrustful. I don't know if you think someone's going to poison his water or what exactly, but there's a lot of things going on behind the scenes that have been stumbling blocks.
He's not Al Heyman's guy.
Right.
Errol Spence has been with Heyman from the very beginning.
And I'm not saying Al Heyman's going to do anything.
No, but I get what he's doing.
But his hesitation is understandable because he's not one of their guys. They're going to cater to Spence more than they're going to cater to him. So he wants to be, you know, compensated financially for that. But I do think eventually they're going to get to the finish line here. It's my understanding that they're not there yet, exactly, but that they will get there. The fight is going to happen November 19th, which is what I thought all along, because some people, you know, on Twitter and all, you know, not reporters necessarily, but just people, it's too late for the fight. Why is it too late? It's September
15th.
Plenty
of time to promote it. You've got more than 2 months.
And you don't need to promote it all that much.
No. The days of, like, multi-city press tours are gone. You only do that.
Right.
It happens infrequently. You don't even need to do them necessarily.
They have time to train for 2 full months for the fight, and I would have to believe that both of them are in some semblance of training now, thinking that the fight is going to happen. So that's not really an issue. They're going to do one press conference. They're not going to do a multi-sit, like you just said, though. Those days are long gone. So there's no real – like, if they announce the fight 10 days from now, well, are people not going to buy the fight because it wasn't announced until September 30th or whatever?
You don't need a three-month walk-up. I mean, if it was 6 weeks, I'd say, all right, maybe, but it's 12 at this point or whatever it is, and there's more than enough time. I wonder what network it winds up on. I mean, Showtime and Fox are still affiliated with PBC. When this all was kind of breaking down, Keith, one thing that popped into my mind was, like, I wonder if they'd push it to, like, February, because Fox has a Super Bowl this year, and if they did it with Fox, you could use that platform to promote it, but it does sound like the 19th is what they're targeting.
Yeah, in terms of which network winds up distributing it, I would be surprised if it weren't Showtime, just because all of the PBC inventory has been shifted to Showtime. Fox is, for all intents and purposes, out of boxing except doing the occasional pay-per-view, and this isn't just any old pay-per-view. This is the non-heavyweight pay-per-view in boxing.
I thought that too, but like Spence, I think all of his pay-per-views have been Fox, or
no, the Ugas fight
was
Showtime.
Sorry, but the previous Danny Garcia was Fox. Was Fox, yeah.
But like, if you don't, unless Al Heyman is trying... Now, look, you're going to go where you get the better deal. I understand that. At the same time, you know, he has a much more profitable, better working relationship with Showtime now than he has with Fox. It looks like Fox is getting out of boxing. It looks like they're interested in doing the occasional pay-per-view that shouldn't be a pay-per-view, like Luis Ortiz.
Right,
doesn't cost them much. They're not committing any money to boxing. So unless he's trying to... unless Heyman were trying to... I'm not trying to get into the head of Al Heyman, because
now that would be a good story.
Right, no, but I'm saying, I mean, obviously he knows how to move chess pieces and all and does all his things behind closed doors. But unless he's trying to salvage this relationship with Fox, which to my understanding is pretty much unsalvageable in that they're not going to do another multi-fight contract with PBC, then I don't understand why it wouldn't be on Showtime, because I think Showtime, with its, you know, with its reach with CBS and everything, can offer most of what Fox, if not all of what Fox is providing from a promotional standpoint. Because look what they did with the Caleb Plant fight with Canelo, right? They plastered
great
it all over college football and NFL
high
coverage.
Number of buys, yeah.
And it did, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 800,000 buys. And what mainstream sports fan knows, which mainstream sports fan knows who Caleb Plant is? I mean, come on, you know, so. They'll do. I do think there's a lower ceiling than 800,000 for as big of a fight as it is in boxing circles. There is a lower ceiling than 800,000 for Spence and Crawford.
Yeah, I agree with that that much. Did you read the story this week about Showtime potentially getting lumped in with Paramount. I found that fascinating.
Full disclosure, a Paramount employee, yes. All that, you know, yes. So, but nonsense.
Is it?
Just okay. Complete nonsense.
It's Wall Street Journal wrote that.
Well, you know, the thing is, I think they got tripped up on, there were some long-range talks about, they're doing deals with particular providers, like yep. Their deal is up and everything, and there was something just kind of mentioned in passing that, you know, eventually sometime down the road maybe something like that could happen. Like, it's nothing concrete. Now, look, I'm no high-level Paramount executive by any stretch. I'm not trying to make it like I'm in on these decisions or anything, because obviously I'm a boxing writer, for God's sake. Well, no one cares what I think, probably, but why would, if Showtime has roughly 30 million subscribers, why would you disband it? It makes no sense. They also produce some, for the way it was explained to me, somewhere in the neighborhood of $2 billion in profits for the company every year. Why would you get rid of that? It's insane.
Cord cutters, baby.
Well, I mean, but what, I would understand it if in this is not a television, we're not the television insiders now.
We are
but,
not.
But the point is, if they at some point made Showtime and Paramount Plus the same streaming service, you know, if available for one price, I could see that happening eventually. But now you're still getting two
right.
subscriptions and bundling it into one, and you're still making more money. So I don't really know why you would get rid of it. And Showtime's a pretty long established brand. I mean, it's a, you know, they've been in boxing for 37 years or whatever. So. Not that boxing is the highest priority right. at Paramount Global, but
I've done it well for many years. So yeah, that didn't make a lot of sense to me at the time why they would do that. Yeah, but,
the way it was explained to me by people who know much more from internally in the company, nonsense. Like, it's just dead wrong.
All right. On that note, speaking of nonsense, Eddie Hearn is here this week, and he's getting asked a lot about Tyson Fury versus Anthony Joshua. So. Anthony Joshua's and Eddie Hearn's treatment of the Fury, quote, offer, it reminds me a lot, for people that watch Seinfeld, of when George Costanza told Susan Ross's parents he had a house in the Hamptons, and they went to go visit him, right? So bear with me. So they says, I got a house in the Hamptons. They say, we'll go. And he says, and he starts telling all these lies as he's driving to the Hamptons. Then he parks the car and says, we got to walk this far. It's just, it feels like Eddie and AJ are trying to call the bluff of Tyson Fury and Frank Warren. Like, it can't be as simple as a fight like this getting done for 60-40. It can't. I mean, we both covered how complicated the deal that was going to be in the Middle East was for Joshua versus Fury. I mean, Eddie Hearn agonized over that deal. I just can't believe it's as simple as Principality Stadium in Cardiff, December 3rd, 60-40 split on the part of Tyson Fury, with the winner having the option of reversing it and getting a different split. I just don't believe it. I don't know how you feel about this, but I just don't believe that fight is going to happen.
Well, first, as a huge Seinfeld fan, love the Costanza reference.
I've got two solariums.
Yeah, exactly. And he goes, you want to turn it up a notch, baby?
Anyway, all right, here we go.
Yeah, exactly. It seems like entirely too complicated of a deal to put together in a relatively short amount of time. December 3rd is not that far away. I don't see it. And I do agree with you in some sense. They're calling their bluff. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well,
yes.
And if you're,
yes,
jo- and
yes,
if you're Joshua,
just keep saying yes.
Why would you say no to it? I mean, you've lost back-to-back fights decisively
you
to
think
the
that,
other.
Though, like, I kind of feel the different way. Like, it's like, Joshua is now, like, I don't know if he's going to stick with Robert Garcia, stick with AJ Fernandez, go a different direction, but it feels like Joshua needs to not rebuild over the course of multiple years, but how about you take a nice, easy whatever in December? How about you mm-hmm. fight Dillian White in the first quarter of mm-hmm. next year? And then, I know Tyson Fury is the equivalent of boxing ADD, so let him fight, like, Derek Chisora in December if he wants to get a payday, and
no,
then face
I'm going to stop you on that, because Derek Chisora, for beating Kubrat Pulev, better not get a title shot. I'm going to have to put my foot down on that one. Not that anyone's listening to me exactly, but
Derek Chisora hater. War Chisora.
No, look, God bless Derek Chisora. He's entertaining and he's some yeah. But let's
be a great press conference. Great lead up to that fight.
Yeah, I'm going to flip some tables and do some crazy stuff, but at the same time, let's everyone calm down. Mm-hmm. He beat Kubrat Pulev, who's not good and is 40 plus years old. I don't know how that warrants getting a shot at the, you know, one of the two heavyweight champions. Anyway,
won a lot of money in that fight too. 6-1 by decision. cash right there.
Like a,
nailed it.
Wow.
Sit in NBA Summer League watching that with a couple of guys on press row. That was a blast.
You're just trying to promote your gambling picks on here is what you're doing. But
I'm hot, baby. I'm hot.
But I don't see the fight coming together in that short a time. There's too many complications. There's too, you know, I understand what you're saying about Joshua, but I've been hearing about Joshua, you know, fine-tuning things, rebuilding, blah, 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 since he got knocked out by Andy Ruiz. Mm. Maybe he just is what he is. You could bring in trainers from all over the world. He's just going to fight the way that he fights. And maybe he realizes that to some extent. You know, maybe he's like, well, I can make an enormous amount of money for what would, even though he's lost back-to-back fights to Usyk, it would still be the biggest fight in British boxing history.
Oh, huge.
By
yeah.
a long shot, right? Yeah. By a country mile, right? Yeah. So why wouldn't he do it?
Yeah.
You know, he's lost back-to-back fights. Maybe he doesn't want to. And maybe if you're Joshua, you've made so much money, you feel like, do I really want to go to training camp and get motivated? Can I get motivated for fighting whatever guys you're, you know, whoever it might be, Otto Wallin or whoever. And he's not going to fight Southpaw probably.
I'm looking forward to the next Otto Wallin press release.
I'm not disparaging Otto Wallin.
No, I'm not. My inbox clicks like yours, like with Otto Wallin challenges. Shout out to his PR people. Absolutely. I keep sending those releases out.
But what my point is, like a non-champion, a guy who's not a star, how is he going to get up for those kinds of fights? So maybe he just feels like he feels he can beat Fury. He's not looking at it like he's going to go in there and lose. I think Fury beats Joshua, but it's an enormous event, and maybe he just doesn't want to waste time taking, you know, B and C level opponents because he won't be able to get up for them, and maybe he doesn't want to fight that much longer either. I mean, he's 32 now, right?
Yeah.
32. He's going to be 33 soon, maybe something, but he's getting a little older, and he's made so much money. He doesn't have to fight anymore.
Yeah.
So maybe, it'll, you know, from that perspective, maybe he would want to do it. But
he's got that massive new DAZN deal that is encompassing multiple fights, at least. That's going to pay him a lot of money.
Yeah. Well, that was good business.
he still. I'll tell
no,
you this.
Not for, and I don't mean for him. For him, it was.
Well, I mean, he still does pay-per-view buys. I'll give him that. Like, he'll still, he could fight anybody and still draw a crowd. He's still, I would argue, he's as popular as Fury in the UK.
He is. No, yeah. And like you said, maybe about Canelo before, he's like Joshua in that sense. Like, yeah. If he were to lose to Golovkin on Saturday, he's still a superstar.
Yeah.
He still
has
an entire country behind him.
Yeah.
And a lot of people in the U.S. So.
Yeah. There's no doubt about that. Be interesting what he decides to do if that fight comes together. But more than anything else, I think we both agree. It's just, it feels like it's happening too quickly. Like, I'd love to believe that you could put together a fight of that magnitude as quickly as it seems to be coming together. I just don't believe that's possible.
Also, Chris, you know, Tyson Fury is very entertaining. Mm-hmm. He's been great for boxing in many ways. But he goes on there every day and says something different.
Yes.
So, like, there's some days he's not fighting anymore. So
he's challenging
so
Derek Chisora. He's challenging Francis Ngannou.
Right.
He's retiring. He's traveling to Iceland to challenge the mountain.
Every week it's something else, right?
Yes.
So
if he fights the mountain, I'll go to that. I'm all in for Tyson Fury versus the mountain. Keith, appreciate your time, as
my pleasure,
always.
Man.
I'm going to go get
yep.
more pizza, and next slice
nice.
Is on me.
There you go.
When we come back, this week's picks brought to you by FanDuel. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Now, I'm supposed to talk here about what I remember and what I loved about my first car. And that's easy for me to do because I still have my first car. And as long as it keeps running, and so far so good, I intend to have that car probably until the day I die. That's how much I love that car. It is like a child to me. Now, it does require some upkeep, and that's why I'm grateful for a place like eBay Motors. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED lights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back, and joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddie, you know we gotta give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests who are gonna be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddie as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty: Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, football season is underway, so now is the perfect time to download FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Because right now, new customers get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. That's free bets back if your first bet doesn't win. Just sign up with the promo code BOXING. Now, I'll be the first to admit, I am not a massive gambler, but I am a pretty big New England Patriots fan as someone from Boston. And even though the Pats struggled in week one, I'm still going to ride or die with them and... when I'm watching them, I'm going to gamble and I'm going to bet on them and I'm going to use FanDuel to get that done. So just sign up with the promo code BOXING for your no sweat first bet. FanDuel has all your favorite bets from the money line to point spreads to player props. You can combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payout with a same game parlay. With live betting, you'll get updated odds on games that have already started. The app is safe, secure, and super easy to use. Get paid your winnings fast. So sign up today with promo code BOXING for your no-sweat first bet. Make every moment more this season with FanDuel, the official sportsbook partner of the NFL. All
right, time now for this week's picks brought to you by our friends over at FanDuel. If you're not betting with FanDuel, you are doing it incorrectly. We are here in Las Vegas for the big one. Canelo Alvarez, Gennady Golovkin, trilogy completing, super middleweight championship, undisputed status on the line. This is as big as it gets in boxing right now. And right now, Canelo Alvarez is a big favorite. Minus 550, according to FanDuel. Gennady Golovkin plus 410. I believe Alvarez wins. I know he's coming off a loss to Dimitri Bivol, but talking to Canelo this week, it feels like he was more focused for this training camp than he was for Bivol, wasn't playing as much golf over the last few months, and is really locked in on getting a clear win against his longtime rival. So take Canelo Alvarez to win this fight at minus 550. Load up on it. He's going to win. I believe it. Now, how he wins. This is where you can make a little bit of money. Alvarez by decision is minus 110. That's the bet that I like. A lot of people are saying Canelo Alvarez going to go for a knockout, going to be the first guy to stop Gennady Golovkin, and maybe he will be. But Gennady Golovkin, even at age 40, has a granite chin and has, it's a cliche, but has that heart of a champion. I just don't believe that Golovkin is going to get stopped in what could be his final significant fight. So I'm taking Canelo to win, and I'm taking him to win by points. I think this fight is a little more clear on the scorecards than the previous two fights have been. So Canelo to win, Canelo to win by points. Those are my picks brought to you by FanDuel. That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Keith Idek for joining the show. As always, subscribe, rate, review this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you download podcasts. And I will see you Saturday night after the fight between Canelo and Triple G for a special bonus podcast.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.